Welcome to the FPA Business Before Technology podcast, where our goal is to provide small business owners and key decision makers with valuable nuggets to help you grow or simply improve how you run your business, ultimately looking to increase your profitability. My name is Craig Pollack. I'm the founder and CEO of FPA Technology Services, and I'm your host for this podcast. Do you ever wonder what other business owners are running up against out there? Are you too busy working in your business to work on your business? Do you ever feel like you're in this thing alone? Are you at a crossroad with your business where some new ideas would help? For nearly 30 years, I've been helping companies grow and improve their businesses by leveraging technology, whether it's software, hardware, on-prem, or in the cloud, and at the same time, building FPA into the premier IT service provider in the greater Los Angeles area. This experience has given me exposure to hundreds of businesses and all sorts of systems, and as a lifelong learner, has helped me gather all I could about the ins and outs of running a business. And these are the sorts of things I want to share with you on this podcast. In today's podcast, I sit down with Tim Fitzpatrick, marketing consultant, fractional CMO, and founder of Rialto Marketing, a full-service marketing consulting agency helping B2B professional service firms get the benefits of a marketing leader without the full-time cost. In his engagements, Tim works to accelerate growth in businesses by removing the revenue roadblocks most small B2B businesses run into. With his proprietary Rialto Revenue Acceleration System, Tim has developed a proven system to not just improve marketing, but also generate real and meaningful results. I love talking with Tim about all things marketing, and I know you'll enjoy our conversation as well. I'm so excited to have Tim on our podcast and share some of his insights with you today. So here we go. Let's talk about how to remove your revenue roadblocks with Tim. All right. Welcome, Tim Fitzpatrick of Rialto Marketing. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing great, Craig. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is the first time that we've really peeled back, you know, the topic of marketing for SMBs. So I'm super excited. I think that's a big part of sort of my day-to-day role, but I focus on the marketing here on you know, at FPA, but love to talk to a professional out there and learn more about this and share what we can with our listeners and, you know, help people out with their marketing side of things. So before we dive in, can you just, you know, let's start off with just telling us a little bit about yourself, how you got here, what your experience is, and, you know, how you came about to found Rialto Marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I graduated from college, I was a math major. I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do, but I was always good with math and figured, hey, this should be applicable in a lot of different business settings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I graduated. My dad had actually been an entrepreneur for, at the time, I think 25 plus 30 years, somewhere around there. He was a manufacturer's rep in the consumer electronics industry. And he had started a wholesale distribution company a couple of years before I graduated with a friend of his. And at the time I graduated, I knew they had no full-time employees in the company. And I said, hey, you know, why don't I work for you for the summer while I figure out, you know, what my next steps are going to be? And he was like, yeah, sure. So I started, and Craig, that was it, man. After 3 months, I was hooked. We were selling home theater equipment. Okay. You know, so it was like toys.
What were you hooked on? Like what was
just everything, man. I was soaking up information like a sponge. I was just enjoying it. I was enjoying learning about the equipment, learning the business, mm-hmm. you know, talking to the clients that we had. And because I was the first full-time employee, I was doing everything. I was shipping, I was receiving, I was doing sales, marketing, I was paying bills, you know, mm-hmm. I was depositing checks, all of those things. And at the end of that 3 months, I said, look, I really love this. I would like to continue doing this, you know, if this has been helpful. And, you know, fortunately for me, I mean, I obviously had an in, it was my dad, but he was like, yeah, I would love to have you stay on. And, you know, the other partner that he had was more of a silent partner. And, you know, my dad just let me kind of take the reins. The two companies, the distribution company and the rep company were complimentary, right? We were serving the same types of clients, but my dad was doing his thing in his rep company. And he gave me a lot of autonomy and a lot of freedom. He let me make mistakes. he let me learn from those mistakes, but he also was always there to help strategize and really figure out what direction we were going to go. And because of that, it worked out really well. We grew at an average of about 60% a year for 9 years. Wow, sold the company in 2005.
Okay.
And at that point, both my dad and I had contracts for 3 years with the company that bought us. We stayed on for 3 years. At the end of the 3 years, I wanted to continue to stay. And so I stayed with the company. I was in Northern California at the time. I moved to Colorado with the company. I wanted to move. And so this was 2008 timeframe, and we got bought by a public company. So in 2008, early 2009, I mean, we all know what was going on. I mean, it was a mess.
Yep.
It was a mess. And, you know, public companies tend to manage based on the quarterly financials. And so, you know, in early 2009, they cut 30% of the branch locations, and I got laid off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got laid off by the company that bought us. This was all I knew at that point from a professional standpoint. And so I took some time to kind of figure out, geez, what are my next steps going to be? And I had always been interested in real estate. And so I just went completely different direction, and I got involved in residential real estate. And I started, this was early 2010. Mm-hmm. The opportunities in that market were foreclosures and short sales,
right?
You know, people that were trying to sell their house for less than what it was worth. And so I mentored under a guy in the real estate office that I was in that was doing a ton of short sale business. And so I learned the business that way. I started knocking on doors for people that were in foreclosure. And Craig, man, I was putting myself outside my comfort zone every day. The first time I knocked on a door, I was terrified. You had no idea what to expect,
right?
Especially knocking on a door for somebody that I didn't know whether they were sick, whether they had lost a job. I mean, there was all kinds of things that were happening. But the more I did it, the more I got comfortable with it. My comfort zone just continued to expand, and I started to gain traction. And so I, you know, for 2.5-3 years, I did short sale business, you know, but I reached a point where, man, I started waking up and I was like, I got to do this again. You know, it was like, as somebody once said to me, it's the Sunday evening effect, right? Where Sunday evening, you're like, oh my God, I've got to go back to work tomorrow and do that.
Right.
But I was having that every damn day. Ugh. And I was like, I got to do something different. This is stupid. Like, owning your own business, you should enjoy what you're doing. You should feel good about it. And I was not in that place. And so I decided to shift gears again. And that's when I got involved in marketing, which is obviously what I'm doing today. That path has not been straight. It has been winding, and it's taken me a while to really figure out where I wanted to be in marketing, where my skill sets were. But I feel like I'm at that place where I, you know, I like what I'm doing from a marketing standpoint, and it's where my skill sets lie. So That's my professional journey in a nutshell.
Interesting. Super interesting. So, I mean, I think in some respects, personally, I like that story, and I like the fact that it's almost the school of hard knocks, although obviously you got your degree in math and whatnot.
Yeah.
But right, there's so many people in sales and marketing who've never seen the other side of the business, the operations side, right? And and there's always this disconnect between sales and service, right?
Yeah.
Sales and production. Right. And I think having that sort of background, I think, would give you a different appreciation for that and an understanding, so that your marketing efforts go about differently than I think somebody who's just purely theoretically schooled in marketing and trying to say, this is how you should do it versus This is where you're going to see results. Right.
You have to have all those things in alignment, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have marketing and sales bringing in leads, but then the customer service, the production side, the operation side of the business isn't equipped to handle that, you know, you still got problems, right?
Right.
So it's, you know, I always like to say that if you don't have sales and marketing generating leads that are turning into customers, you know, how good you are really doesn't matter, right? You're mm-hmm. just a best kept secret. But once you have those leads coming in consistently that are becoming customers, man, you gotta have a solid operation to fulfill that and continue to meet the needs of your clients.
Right. Well, I heard, and this always stays in the back of my mind, but I heard once the best marketing saying, which was, people don't know how good you are until they know how good your marketing is.
Say that one more time.
People don't know how good you are until they know how good your marketing is.
Yes. Right? Yes, that's right.
So, right. You can be the best kept secret in the world, like you said, but if people don't know about it, how do you get new business? Right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Rialto. What do you guys do? I mean, marketing is such a broad, you know, statement, yes. But let's peel back Rialto a little bit and tell us a little bit about what you guys do and how that plays out.
Yeah. So as you touched on, Craig, marketing is so broad, especially today compared to, you know, when I was in distribution in the mid to late 90s, when I got into it, marketing was quite different at that point, you know, but now there's so many different digital channels. It's tough for a lot of people, right? It can be very overwhelming. It can be frustrating. It's hard to really hone in on where you should focus to get the best return. And, you know, from a marketing standpoint, I am a marketing consultant and an outsourced or fractional chief marketing officer. So we help B2B professional service firms that need the help of a marketing leader to accelerate growth without the full-time cost. You know, so there are a lot of businesses out there that are investing in marketing, but they're not at a place where it makes sense to hire a high-paid strategic level marketing executive, but they need that insight. And so that's kind of the gap that we fill. And we really focus on three primary areas of marketing: strategy, which I think of like fuel; planning, where you outline the vehicles that you're actually going to use; and then leadership, where either we jump into the driver's seat and make sure those vehicles get where they need to go, or there are times where we coach, mentor, guide the owner so that they can learn and start to feel confident in their abilities to manage their own marketing efforts. Because it's really hard to manage something that you don't have a firm understanding of. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's, right. I see this all the time. People, and this isn't just with marketing. This is, with anything, right? It's, you know, if you're trying to hire a marketing coordinator, but you don't really understand exactly what that person should be doing, how they should be doing it, and how to hold them accountable, and how to coach and guide them, man, it's really hard to be successful. And so our clients tend to be people that are investing in marketing already, but it's just not doing what they want it to for them. And they know that they know they have opportunities to grow, and they know they can be getting more from it. And they need somebody to step in, take the reins to drive results.
Right. Well, it sounds like a lot of people that I know, or a lot of companies that I know, in terms of, you know, it's similar to us, similar to IT, right? In terms of, it's a black box. It's really hard to hire for. It's hard to align yourself with a partner that you can trust. And obviously trust takes a long time, but also a lot of, you know, businesses out there, they try to do these things at first, right? They try to do it themselves. And like you said, because there's so many different facets to marketing, quote unquote, and I'm doing air quotes right now, right? You have, just on the surface, right? You can have your website, you can have content, you could have inbound marketing, social media, SEO, events, literature. I mean, there's so many different aspects, right? And I think what ends up happening to a lot of small businesses, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they start picking off things. Well, let's try this, right? Let's build a new website. Okay, great. Looks pretty. Great. Okay, but it's not ranking where we want it. Oh, well, now I need to hire somebody to help us with the SEO or pay-per-click, or I need to do this, or I need to do that. And I think that that's where I would assume your services come in to help really sort of corral, you know, it's like herding cats, right? It's like corral these different vendors and corral this approach and come up with something that's unified. Cause you know, the thing is, and again, we see this in IT, is like you start picking things off and you start spending money. And then before you know it, you're not really spending your money as wisely as you could. And yes. That's, I think that's where you would come into play and really bring value to the situation.
Yeah. You gotta have a plan. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's so many businesses that just don't have a plan, right? Or the tactics that they're using have gotten them to a certain place and then they've hit a ceiling and they can't push through it. Mm-hmm. And especially with marketing, because there's so many different channels and so many different tactics, it's just people tend to err on the side of just taking action without having a plan and having a strategy. And when that happens, things inevitably don't work, right? And I hear this all the time, you know, oh, well, we did social media, it didn't work. We did SEO, it didn't work. And most cases, it's not that those things don't work. It's that they didn't have the right fuel mm-hmm. behind those vehicles, you know? And when you look at strategy to me, there's a few really key elements in strategy. One is target market. Like, what market are you going to serve and who are your ideal clients within that market? Like, everybody with a heartbeat that's willing to pay you is not an ideal client. Mm-hmm. And when we first get in business, a lot of us err on that side. It's like, cool, you got money. Awesome. Right. Let's do money's, it. We can help you.
Cash and is
king. I mean, I think that's natural, right? It's like, we want to generate revenue, but we realize over time, geez, some of these people we're working with, like, this isn't, we're not serving them well, and they're not serving us well either. And from a marketing standpoint, everything is driven by who your ideal clients are. So when you just jump into, yeah, I work with all small business owners, it's too broad. Mm-hmm. And we can't hit a target that we can't see, right? So we really need to narrow down on things, outline those, who those ideal clients are, before we start to really jump into the tactics. Mm-hmm. Because here, I'll give your audience super simple way to start to hone in on this, because, and this works really well for businesses that have been in business for a while. You've got current and past customers that you can just start to look through, because you don't necessarily need to feel like you need to reinvent the wheel. You should look at your existing and past customers. And I call these the three power questions. Ask yourself the three power questions. Who do we love working with? Because why the hell do you want to work with people that make you want to bang your head against a wall every day, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be so much happier if you're working with people you love working with. Second, who are our most profitable clients? It's totally okay to make money. And frankly, if we're going to serve our clients at the highest level, we have to be profitable. It's totally okay to make money. And then the third is, who do we get great results for? Okay, so who do we love working with? Who are our most profitable clients, and who do we get great results for? Those three questions will help you hone in on that group of clients that check all three of those boxes. And it is that group where you can start to dig a little bit deeper to start to identify, hey, are there patterns? Are there subgroups that share commonalities? You look at demographics, which are the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. In B2B, in business to business, that's could be industry type, it could be what type of position they have, it could be age, could be income, degree. I mean, it can be a number of different things. The demographics start to paint a picture of what this person looks like. What I think is equally, if not more important, are the psychographics about those people. What are they thinking? The psychographics help you get in their head. What are the common problems that they have that you're helping them solve? What are their aspirations, their goals, their dreams, the roadblocks that they have? All of those things help you start to understand who your ideal clients are. And when you dig deep into that first group, you have these subgroups come out that have commonalities based on demographics and psychographics. Those are your ideal clients. And what I typically recommend is people don't focus on more than 1 to 3 to start. Mm-hmm. One is best. And the reality is, a lot of people, one of the biggest roadblocks people have when when we talk about this is, well, geez, if I narrow down, I'm going to miss out on all this business. And the exact opposite becomes the case, because when you hone in, you can create a message that's going to really be engaging for those people that you intend to attract. Mm-hmm. You convert more because you're having conversations with people that you work extremely well with and that you know very well. Mm-hmm. And you're, guess what? You're still going to get referrals, leads from that are outside your ideal client. But at that point, you can make the choice. Is this going to be a good fit for me or not? And if it's not, you can always refer them to somebody else that's going to serve them better.
Right.
But you got everything from a marketing standpoint starts with your target market. So whenever somebody is talking about a symptom of marketing, I'm not generating enough leads. I don't have enough people coming to my website. My website's not converting. We're putting out content on social, but it's not working. You got to go back to strategy, because strategy typically will uncover the root cause. So many people are looking for drugs to treat the symptom of their marketing problems rather than treating the cause.
Right.
That's why strategy is so important.
So explain to me, I mean, those are, I love those three points. Who do we like working with? Who are we most profitable with? And then who do we get great results with? That's just foundational stuff, right? I mean, that's just so basic. What did you call those three questions?
I call them the three power questions.
The three power questions. That's awesome. So explain to me, like, I'm sitting here listening to this stuff, and this is all great stuff, but explain to me the difference between, because when we first started, you also came up with three things, sort of the three pillars or the three legs of the stool, mm-hmm. called marketing, strategy, planning, and leadership. And you said strategy was like the fuel, and we've spent some decent time talking about that now. But what's the difference between strategy and planning? Like, I'm trying to wrap my brain around those two things.
Yeah. So strategy are like those fundamental elements that they lay the foundation for you to build the rest of your house from. So when I talk about marketing strategy, there's three elements that we look at: target market, your message to that market. How do you communicate your value in a way that engages and attracts them? And then your services and your offers. Okay. Once those things are in place, then we can start to look at planning. And with planning, there are three additional elements that we look at: lead generation. How are you going to generate leads? You have conversion, right? Lead conversion. Mm-hmm. I generate leads. How am I actually going to convert them? What's my process for that? Mm-hmm. And then retention and referrals. All of those things are things that we look at when we look at planning. A lot of businesses focus strictly on lead gen. Mm-hmm. Got to generate leads. It's not always a lead gen problem. Sometimes you might be generating plenty of leads, but they're not high quality leads, or you're not converting them well, because you have a bad process. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you may feel like you need to generate more leads because you're doing a lousy job of getting retaining clients.
Right. Your churn is so
and
high.
Getting referrals, right? Your churn is too high.
Right.
So you've got to consider all three of those elements when you look at planning.
Okay.
So those are the three things that we look at when we start to dig into planning. But then you also have, that's from a more strategic level, mm-hmm. right? But then from a planning standpoint, you also have kind of the more tactical side of, like, what is the plan? Like, how do I create a marketing plan?
Right.
And when we start to dig into that, we use a 90-day marketing plan. Okay, it's six steps. I like to keep things as simple as humanly possible, Craig, because complexity is the enemy of results, right? It gets in the mm-hmm. way of things.
Right.
And I think we saw this at the beginning of the pandemic, right? Whatever plans most of us had at the beginning of the pandemic, man, most of that stuff went out the freaking window, right?
It did.
And if nobody puts together a year-long marketing plan that is the same at the end as it was at the beginning. So mm-hmm. if knowing that is the case, why waste the time to put together a complex one-year marketing plan. To me, it makes absolutely no sense, which is why we do 90 days. 90 days is long enough to start seeing traction and start to get enough data that'll help inform the decisions that you need to make. But it's short enough where it keeps things simple and it allows us to make course corrections and just wash, rinse, repeat. Because when it comes to marketing, it's all about testing, right? We test, we measure, and then we learn and we just continue to iterate. So if you want, I'll give you just quick rundown of the six steps in this 90-day plan.
Yeah, go for it. That'd be great.
First step is your target market. Who are your ideal clients within the market you serve? At a minimum, I just want to see like a paragraph. Like who are these one to three people? Okay. Like I said before, everything from a marketing standpoint starts with your ideal clients. So I want to make sure it's top of mind in your plan. Second thing is, what's your goal? What is my goal for the next 90 days? Specific. It needs to be measurable. It's time bound because this is a 90-day plan. But we have to have an idea of where we're headed, right? So typically this 90-day goal is just going to be the next step to get us towards our longer term goals. Okay.
Okay.
But you know, what most of us know as SMART goals, right?
Right.
Specific, measurable, achievable, reasonable, time bound.
Right.
Are outcome-based goals. Okay. When you think about an outcome-based goal, there are a lot of things that are beyond your control that can impact your ability to hit that goal. So I like to tell people, I think it's important to have one in your plan, but don't get so tied to it that if you don't hit it, like, you know, you get, you know, sad and, you know, unmotivated and the wheels come off. I think it's much more important to focus on the actions you can take that you can control, but it's important to have an idea of where you're headed.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Third, what's your budget and what are your resources? This gives you an idea of what you have to work with. When we look at budget, budget is budget, right? Do I have $500 a month? Do I have $50,000 a month? Resources is time. How much time do you or the other resources that you have to invest in this, and their capability? What are their capabilities? You know, if I want Joe on my team to manage LinkedIn and he doesn't even know what the hell LinkedIn is, that's a mismatch, right? I mean, maybe he has all the time in the world, but the capability is not there. So we either need to level up those skills or we need to find somebody else to put in that seat. So this third step just gives you an idea of what you have to work with.
Right. Okay.
The fourth step is, where am I currently at, right? What's my current plan? And a lot of people may not have a formalized plan in place. That's okay. We just need to get a baseline of where we're starting from. What do we have in place that's existing from a marketing standpoint? What are we doing on a regular basis consistently with our marketing? We can't create a plan that's going to help us get to where we need to go until we know where we start. It's like my GPS.
Right.
Can't tell me how to get to the airport unless I tell it, like, am I starting in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, or Los Angeles, California?
Right.
Right. So that's all we're doing here, is getting a baseline of where we're at.
Okay.
And starting to identify what's working, what's not, right? What growth and profit opportunities do we have? In the fifth step, that's where we look at, what are our priorities? What are our marketing priorities for the next 90 days? Because it's 90 days, it keeps things pretty simple. You can't focus on 15 different things in 90 days, right?
Right.
I mean, unless you're a huge, huge company and you have a huge department, then maybe you can. But for most of us, it helps keep things simple.
Right.
And in those first 90, now we're going to just outline, what are we going to focus on? When we know what our priorities are, we have clarity, which eliminates stress, and it just keeps us focused, right? It helps us eliminate distraction as well.
Right.
A lot of people ask at this step, like, well, how do I know where to start? A couple low-hanging pieces of fruit for most businesses. one strategy. If you don't understand, if you don't have your ideal clients nailed down and your messaging to that market nailed down, you have to start there. Otherwise, if you jump right into tactics, you're going to waste time and money. So that's the first place to start. Second is your website. Everything you do from a marketing standpoint, even if you're 100% referral business anymore, you know, in the 90s, whenever, before the internet, you get a referral, people would pick up the phone, right?
Right.
Guess what, Craig? They don't do that anymore.
Nope.
The internet exists.
Right.
What are they? If you say to somebody, hey, Joe, you gotta go talk to Tim over at Rialto Marketing. Here's his contact info. Is Joe calling me or emailing me first? No, he is not. He's going to my website. He's looking at what it says. Does it resonate with him? He might check out if I have content resources there. Maybe I've got some free material you can take advantage of, or a podcast or blog content. He might check that out. He might go check out my social media profiles. He's checking me out long before he's actually reaching out.
100%. Yeah.
So website, super important. It's got to have a strong message. It's got to have a clear journey that you're leading people down. If it looks like it was built in 1995, Joe's probably not reaching out to me. I lost a referral and I never even knew it.
Right.
So website, super important. The third element, there's a few different things in this third element, but they're related. One is, what are you currently doing that's working from a marketing standpoint? Too many people feel like, I need to jump into these new tactics.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, if you've been in business for a period of time, something's working for you.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is, and in most cases, from what I've seen, what's working is not fully optimized.
Right.
Let's take referrals for a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people generating a lot of business from referrals. Awesome, Joe or Jane, you're generating a lot of leads from referrals. Tell me about your referral process. How does that work? Oh, well, Tim, they just come in. I mean, we just have happy clients and they just refer us. Well, that's great, but that's not predictable, right?
Right.
How can we
not
make referrals a little bit more predictable? Mm-hmm. They're not the most predictable thing in the world, but how can we make them a little bit more predictable and increase the likelihood that we're going to continue to get referrals? Well, let's start asking, right? Maybe we can put together a referral program, right? Some type of incentive program. When does it make the most sense in our customer journey, in the process, the experience that they have with our business? When does it make the most sense for us to ask for referrals? You know, when are they at their happiest?
Right. Interesting.
And identify, usually there's at least two or three times in the customer journey that are great times to ask for referrals. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Craig, let's take your business as an example. Okay. IT.
Perfect
so
example.
First, once everything, I'm just going to guess, just tell me where I'm missing things. Okay. But I'm going to just mention the first few things that come to mind. Do you start with an assessment?
We do.
Okay.
Yes.
So you've done an assessment. You've got a baseline of where they're at and where the opportunities are, right? In a lot of cases, you've probably uncovered some things that they absolutely had no idea of. They're like, oh my God, I'm mortified that this existed in my business, right?
Yep. Right. I can think of one
they're like,
today I'm
oh
going
to
be talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, oh my gosh, we just started this process and look at all the stuff that they've uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
Great time to ask, hey, now that you've been through this first part of the process, do you know one other person like you that might benefit from going through this process? Boom, there's one.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, you go to implement, right?
Right.
You're implementing everything that happened within that assessment.
Mm-hmm.
You get done with that, right? Now they have all these great things in place. They're protected. They're happy. Another opportunity to ask again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then what happens? Nothing's perfect, especially in marketing, IT, right? it's right. Not set it and forget it, right? Things right. are constantly in flux and in motion. Something happens and they have an IT issue, right? They call your help desk and guess what? The problem gets solved. Boom, done. They can move on with the rest of their day. Mm-hmm. There's another time where they're super happy. It's another opportunity to ask, right? So we've decided walked through part of the customer journey there, part of the process, and identified three times where you might be able to put in systems in place so that you can ask for a referral at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's just an example of leveraging something that you have, like you said, that you're already doing, but have you really optimized it? Have you created a process around it?
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge plus to working with somebody like you you know, we as business owners are all out there chipping away, right? We're trying to do this and trying to do that, trying to do this. And marketing's no different. It's like, oh, I got an idea. I saw this. Oh, why aren't we doing Facebook ads? Oh, why aren't we doing this? Oh, right. It's like every, you know, and I know my staff hates this. I'm as guilty as anybody. I come up with an idea and like, hey, let's try this. And they're like, whoa, slow down, time out.
Yeah. You know what? That's a perfect example of the other related thing to what I just talked about. Mm-hmm. What's working, we'll optimize it. But guess what? There's things that used to work that you stopped doing because you got distracted, right? Or something else came up and you just stopped doing it. Let's identify what used to work that you stopped doing as well, because that's more low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are your strategy, website, and then what's working, what used to work that we stopped doing. That's very low-hanging fruit. And those are great places to start with from a marketing priority standpoint when you put together your initial plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last step, the sixth step in the 90-day plan we use is metrics. What metrics are we going to track? Mm-hmm. If you don't measure, you have no idea whether things are working or not.
Yep.
And the metrics help guide the decisions that you make. So, you know, at this step, there's so many marketing metrics, Craig. It's ridiculous. A lot of vanity metrics that don't mean much. If you're not tracking much now, I like to focus on three metrics to start, and then you can build from there. First is leads. How many leads are you generating each month? Second is lead source. Where are those leads coming from? When we understand where the leads are coming from, that starts to give us information we need of, gosh, which marketing activities that we're taking are actually generating leads.
Mm-hmm.
And then how many clients are you getting? When you understand how many clients you get each month and you know how many leads you're generating, you get a conversion rate. How many leads?
Closure rate. Yep.
Yep. Conversion, close rate.
Right.
How many leads do we need to get a client?
Mm-hmm.
Those three metrics, in my opinion, are the best, simplest place to start. And then we can start to expand out from there. But those are the three easiest places to start. But once we have those metrics dialed in, the metrics help inform the decisions that we make. And so that six-step plan, it's 90 days. We wash, rinse, repeat every 90 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So explain to me a little bit more, maybe a little bit more detail. What does an engagement look like, you know, working with you? I know you just explained, you know, the 90-day plan, but walk me through maybe timing or, you know, areas that you focus on. So we have a better understanding of how this would feel.
There are multiple ways that we can work with folks. Sometimes it's just on a project basis, right? Mm-hmm. We might be helping them with target market work or messaging work, or we might just be creating a plan that they're going to then go implement. But I'll walk you through kind of what it's like for an ideal client. So for us, an ideal client is somebody that knows they need a marketing leader, but they don't need somebody full-time. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, we work through these three critical areas that we talked about from a marketing standpoint: strategy, planning, leadership. And there are within those three, there are a total of 9 revenue roadblocks. I call them revenue roadblocks. If we can remove these roadblocks, they open up the way for you to accelerate revenue growth. So when we work with an ideal client, the first 3 months, our strategy and planning. We get a baseline of where they're at, right? I call it a marketing scorecard.
Okay.
What are you doing with your marketing? Where are you starting? What's working? What's not? So that we can unlock your growth and profit opportunities. We're going to make sure that you understand exactly who your ideal clients are. And then we're going to create, I call it a magnetic messaging playbook. What's your messaging playbook to engage and attract those types of ideal clients? We also put together, I call it an ideal client GPS. Where are those ideal clients? This is really simple, Craig. It's not rocket science, but if I have a client right now that's a CPA. She works with vets.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started working with her, where are vets located? Mm-hmm. Where do they congregate, online and offline? For her, this Google document was 20-something pages, 25 pages, somewhere around there, of all the different places that vets are.
Hmm.
Podcasts, you know, trade shows, vendors that serve the space, websites, email lists, publications they read, associations, you know, events they go to, all of those things.
Right.
Are you going to try and be at all of those places? No, you're not. But it gives you a very targeted list so that you know, if I go here, I know vets are going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk to vets. I'm not casting my line out in the middle of the ocean, hoping I'm going to catch a trout. Right.
Right.
I'm putting my line in the middle of the trout farm down the street. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just about being targeted with where we market. Right. So that we're fishing where the fish are.
Right.
So at the end of the 3 months, we've got a baseline. We've done our strategy work so that we know they've got a firm foundation, and we've put together the initial marketing roadmap, right? Their initial 90-day plan.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, in month four, we start to transition into leadership. And in leadership, we are tracking the metrics. We're overseeing implementation and execution. And then we're overseeing ongoing optimization, right? You're never done. That's you're always optimizing.
That's the feedback loop.
Yep, that's the feedback loop. Okay. And great plans go to die at implementation and execution, right? There's plenty of people that have received awesome plans for marketing, whatever, any aspect of their business. Somebody's given them the plan and then they fail to implement and execute. So that's why the leadership side of it is so important. You know what metrics you're tracking, you're making sure that things are getting implemented and executed on, and then you're taking that information, you're learning from the actions you're taking, and then you're optimizing and you're going through it over and over again. So that's what the process looks like when we work with an ideal client, right? Okay. And then months four through 12 or beyond, we're there as an outsourced marketing executive, guiding their marketing efforts, meeting with them on a consistent, regular basis, and just helping guide those efforts, being a sounding board for people that are on their team or outsourced marketing people to help guide those people and keep everybody on the same page.
That was something I was going to ask you in terms of, you know, when it comes time to start implementing, are you, or do you guys, does Rialto do the tactical or
no?
So you work with other people who do that or internal? I mean, is that like,
it can be internal team. Right. So maybe you have a marketing coordinator and a marketing manager, or it could be internal and outsourced people. One of the reasons that we stay out of implementation work is marketing is too broad, right? You can't be great at all the implementation work. So the other thing too is I also don't think you should be getting strategy and planning information from somebody that's actually selling you the services that they're going to implement, right? To me, that just seems like a conflict of interest. You know, because it's like, hey, hey, I go to an agency, I need a plan. What do you expect them to put in your plan?
Whatever they do.
Exactly.
Right.
So I like to stay out of that. We are tactic channel agnostic. I do not care. I am going to put in the plan what makes the most sense for you, right? There is no one size fits all marketing plan. We need to put together a plan based on your business, where you're at, what your goals are, what your resources are. All of those things impact what goes in the plan. So we put the plan together and then we'll manage the people that are implementing. If we need to help hire those people, then we can do that, you know, or if we need to help guide the in-house team that's going to implement, we can do that, right? But I don't want to have a vested interest in the actual tactics, which is why I stay out of it.
Right. No, that's awesome. I mean, I think that, especially from a strategic standpoint, that gives you a lot more objectivity, right? And that's what you're looking to bring to the table there is what's the right solution, not what's the right solution I have.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And, you know, I can totally see that from my history, from, you know, the different partners or vendors or whatever you want to call them that I've worked with in the past. It's usually, oh yeah, I can help you because I do this, right? I can improve lead gen because you need to do SEO. Well, why is that? Because that's all I do.
Yeah.
Right. Or I need, you know, you need a new website. Well, why do I need a new website? Well, because that's what I do. Right. I mean, that's not what they're answering the question to me, but you know, you can tell that's if it's sort of like the three blind men describing an elephant, right? Everybody sees it in terms of just with their blinders on, and that's all they see is what they see, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Craig, I see this a lot too, where the company's investing in marketing. They're getting information, they're getting reports back from in-house people or outsourced team or agency. And, you know, the numbers look good. But it doesn't feel good, right? They're not generating enough leads, you know? And that challenge typically comes up because it's the vehicles don't have the fuel, right? The agency, and look, this is, I'm not faulting anybody for this, but it's like the agency was hired for SEO, for example. Okay, great. My job is to drive leads to your website,
right?
To drive traffic, to improve your rankings. Cool. So I'm improving your rankings. I'm giving you reports that you're improving in rankings. You've got more traffic to your website. And you're like, well, this is great, but I'm still not generating leads.
Right.
Again, we lack fuel, right? There's something out of alignment where we tried to treat the symptom and not the cause, right? So we need to go back. If you're investing in SEO and you're generating traffic, you're improving rankings, but you're not generating leads, typically you're attracting the wrong types of leads. It could be an ideal client target market issue, could be a messaging issue, could be your website. They're going back to your website and the messaging sucks and there's no call to action that tells people what the hell you want them to do.
Right.
And you didn't get that information from the SEO agency because guess what? That's not their thing.
That's not their thing. That's outside the box that they work in.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not their fault.
Right.
And it's to no fault of their own. They're doing what they were hired to do. But when you initially hired them, you didn't have all the information you needed to guide them and help them be as successful as possible.
Right.
And that's the gap that we help fill. Right. And it's not your fault as a business owner. I mean, look, we all have skill sets. Man, marketing is, it's tough. It is a difficult thing to do effectively and still spin the other five plates that you're spinning as a business owner to keep your business going. So, you know, if marketing is not your thing, I think it makes a lot of sense to get the help you need so that somebody that knows what they're doing is looking out for the investment that you're making.
Right. Do you have, I mean, quick, I know that we're sort of coming up on our time here, but do you have like an example of a client that you've worked with and, you know, sort of what the before and after look like?
Yeah. I'll give you the first one that comes to mind. This is a client that we've actually worked with for quite a while now, 3-4 years ish. And they're actually a nonprofit. which it's funny that I'm bringing this up because it's typically a little outside of the types of clients that we typically work with. But this nonprofit's a little bit different. They actually sell a software service. Okay. And because of that, it's more like a service-based business than it is a nonprofit. But when they came to us, they were like, look, we want to grow, but we don't know what to do. We don't know where to invest. And we know that right now, the message we're putting out there is confusing. We need help. Mm-hmm. Right. And they were right. I mean, like I went to their website. I mean, I'm a reasonably smart person. I have pretty decent business acumen. I went to their website. I spent like 15 minutes reading through their website, trying to really understand what the hell they did. Mm-hmm. And I still couldn't figure it out. You know, I'm like, yeah, no wonder they're having issues here. Yeah. Right.
Right.
So we started exactly like I outlined. We got a baseline of where they're at. We honed in on, because they were in a really niche market, they already had a pretty good idea of who their two different ideal client types were. Mm-hmm. But we just went through that data just to confirm. Because sometimes people think they know. And when you dig into it, you're like, nah, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not seeing the forest through the trees because they're too in their business. Right.
Right. Right.
Very hard to think objectively about it. So we just want to confirm that their beliefs are accurate. In this case, they were. Then we created messaging that was simple, that was clear, that focused on the problems that they solved, the results and the outcomes that they helped clients achieve, right? Their messaging really focused on their clients, not them,
mm-hmm.
right? Because our clients don't care about us, right, Craig? Right. They care about what we can do for them. So our message needs to focus on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we put those things in place. We created an initial plan for them. Their initial plan, because we had already done the strategy work, the initial plan, we focused on their website, getting it updated, clear journey on the website, strong messaging, and then content, blog content, and Google Ads.
Mm-hmm.
Started to do Google Ads. Because they're a nonprofit, they have the ability to take advantage of the Google Grants program,
mm-hmm.
which if people have never heard of the Google Grants program, nonprofits get up to, I believe it's still up to 10 grand a month in ad spend from Google. So this was a huge benefit for them because they're competing against private companies with the service that they sell. And the Google Grants program gave them the ability to leverage their nonprofit status and try and start driving awareness and leads for not a lot of money out of their pocket, mm-hmm. which is a nonprofit was really important for them. So that's where we started with them. We are still working with them today. And, you know, in the last 3 years, I don't know these numbers 100% off the top of my head, but their average year-over-year growth the last 3 years is somewhere in the 30 to 35% a year range.
Mm-hmm.
And their provider growth, which is a provider for them as a client, right?
Right.
How many new clients do they have coming on, signing up for their software, is up about the same year over year as well. So their growth and their revenue growth and their provider growth is up over the last 3 years, about 30 to 35% each year.
Hmm. Wow. So I mean, literally doubling their size in 3 years, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
Pretty close.
Right. So they must be pretty happy at this point.
They're happy. Yes. Yeah. They're happy. We're happy, right? I mean, again, this goes back to, God, it's so much fun when you can work with people that you love working with,
mm-hmm.
that are profitable, that you're getting great results for. Like meetings with them are not difficult.
Right.
But
that's what you want. I mean, like you said, I think it's hugely important. And this has taken me a long, long time, right? And I've been in the business for a long time. I like to say I started the business 30 years ago when I was 9, but I'd be lying. I wish. Every time anybody complains, they're like, complains about, you know, a birthday. It's like, oh, I'm turning 50. And I'm like, oh, to be 50 again. know? But the concept that, you know, we want to work with people that we enjoy, right? I mean, there's no point in being in business and controlling your own destiny if that means pain, right? Or being around painful people or whatever. It's like, and that's, you know, look, I don't know how similar it is, but you know, IT is one of the unsung heroes in the world, right? Nobody calls us and goes, hey, just want to let you know everything's working. Right.
Yeah.
No, people call us when it's not working and they're upset. And, you know, half the time we're just psychiatrists just helping them get through the pain. Right. And so if you can control who you work with, right. And you can work with people that you enjoy and you're successful with, why not? Like that's the goal of this. It's not just about the money, right. And money is not what defines success. I think it's everything. And what you brought up, I think is huge, you know, as a starting point.
It gives you a measuring stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people come to you and say, hey, we're interested, you've got a measuring stick where you can start checking off boxes going, yep, they checked that box. Yep. Yeah. These people are a good fit. We can help you.
Right.
Because it's okay to say no.
Right.
Like you don't feel like you're doing them a favor if they're not a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
And just send them somewhere else who's a better fit.
Right.
And if they are a great fit for you, then you can feel with fairly high level of confidence that they're going to be a very good client for you.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, certainly, you know, who are we most profitable with is without a doubt a very important question. Right. Yeah. But look, I think also to your point about, you know, enjoying who you work with and being able to say no, right? It's hard to say no to cash, right? It's hard to say no to somebody who's saying, I'm willing to pay you, but you know that the pain of dealing with that is more than that dollar is worth. And it takes a certain level of maturity. And I don't mean individual maturity, but operational maturity to be able to say no to things. Because you know, in the long term, it's going to be better for your business, better for your staff, better, you know, just all the way around.
It takes a lot of discipline, mm-hmm. right? And fortitude to be able to do that. But, you know, Craig, I can tell you, I can't remember who it was that I had this conversation with, but I had the conversation with somebody in the last month
mm-hmm.
who was super niche. And he said to me, I was like, what is the biggest driver of your growth? And he was like, it was my ability to say no to people mm-hmm. that were not a good fit. And he was like, too many business owners can't say no. And because of that, it honestly limits their growth. But he said, the minute I had the strength to be able to do that and the confidence to go, you know what? I know this is right for me long-term. In the short term, it might be hurting my pocketbook, but in the long term, I know it's the best thing for me.
Yep.
And he had enough discipline to do that for a long enough period of time where he's like, okay, I'm turning the corner now. And mm-hmm. me saying no is starting to actually significantly benefit me. He's like, that changed my business completely when I started doing that.
Right. Right. And I can think back over the years of a similar sort of decision points and trajectory, right? Like, okay, that's when we started doing this. And yeah, I can see the results of that. And that's when we started doing this. And that's where I can see the results of it. And, you know, you can talk about whether it's hiring people or whether it's clients or vendor relationships, but, you know, learning how to say no is a super powerful place to be. And it does, I mean, without a doubt, it strengthens you, right? I mean, there might be some short-term pain, like you said. So like I said, you know, I think we're coming up near the end here. I was wondering, do you have any other, I mean, I think that last being able to say no is a huge, huge nugget, but do you have any other, you know, last minute thoughts, anything, you know, to close out with that we haven't covered?
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground. I hope your audience gets some actionable elements from some of the stuff we've talked about today. I guess I would just, the last thing I would share is just thinking about this goes not just with marketing, but your business mm-hmm. as a whole,
right?
Thinking long-term. Like as humans, we are wired to think short-term. And I see far too many people making short-term marketing decisions that they're at the detriment of their long-term success. Like mm-hmm. marketing takes time. It is a lot of work. And it's something you need to just do. You need to do consistently day in, day out. It is an investment in your business. So think long-term with it and you will reap the rewards. If you're constantly stuck in that short-term trap, you're gonna be stuck there.
Right.
And you're not going to get out.
And I think that's a great point. I mean, whether it's marketing or anything else, but consistency and long-term, right? I mean, marketing isn't a quick fix. It's not,
no.
Hey, let's do this. And okay, great. We solved our lead gen problem.
Yeah.
No, that's why I agree with you 100% is starting with the strategy, starting with a plan, understanding who your target market or who your optimal client is, but committing to that. Right. Because it's not just going after them, but it's committing to it and not like taking other dollars when it gets a little hard or gets a little tough. Right. Or it gets a little dry. And I think, you know, you can extrapolate that out to almost any aspect of the business, but 100%. I think that there's always been, and maybe I've learned this with, you know, my kids, but I feel like there's two types of people in the world. There's spenders and there's savers, right? The spenders, they're into the short term, right? I got my paycheck. I'm going to go out. And then there's the savers who are like, well, I want to achieve something three years from now. So therefore I need to put it in the bank and know that it's going to work towards that. And I've seen it in my own kids. I've seen it with other people. And it's like, it's almost, you know, when they say nurture versus nature, right? It's like, either you fall into one of those two categories, but the more successful, you know, CEOs, business owners, what have you, have to take the long term. I mean, you have to. Yeah.
You know, another way to think about it, there's a quote, I can't remember who said this, but marketing is like a crock pot and most people want a microwave.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just
slow
cook. Crock pot it.
We got to slow cook it.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. All right. Well, Tim, thanks so much for your time today. I think personally, this was great. This was phenomenal. I think there were tons of nuggets here and, you know, I know I was taking notes and I think if I were a listener out there, I'd be taking notes big time. So thank you so much for this. This was great. And, is there any place or any way for anybody to get in touch with you? I mean, we'll definitely put, you know, your contact info in the show notes, but anything specific or the easiest way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple. One is our website, which is rialtomarketing.com. It's rialtomarketing.com. All our info is there. The other thing that I would make available to your audience is over at revenueroadblockscorecard.com. revenueroadblockscorecard.com. There is a scorecard there, less than 5 minutes, helps you discover and assess which of the 9 revenue roadblocks that we touched on today are slowing down your growth. It is not some surface level report. There's a ton of value in there. So, you know, if you want to grow and you want to identify where your roadblocks are, that is a great tool to take advantage of.
Well, awesome. RevenueRocketScorecard.com. Is that correct?
RevenueRoadblockScorecard.com.
RevenueRoadblockScorecard.com.
Yep.
Either way, it'll be in the show notes. It'll all be written down. It'll be linked and it'll all work. We won't even have to remember it. But Tim, thanks so much. I appreciate it. I know we've done some work in the past and you're awesome and your company's awesome. And I couldn't recommend you higher. So hopefully, if there's anybody out there who needs or knows of somebody who needs some marketing, even just to bounce an idea off of you, right?
Yep.
I think that's the way that we all sort of work, right? We just want to help people.
Yep, so, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Craig.
And that was Tim Fitzpatrick, founder of Rialto Marketing. I hope you found our conversation as interesting as I did. It's always great to dive into the mind of a subject matter expert like Tim. And there were certainly a lot of nuggets there, and I hope you can apply some of them right away in your business.
Thanks again, Tim, for your time and sharing all of your great thoughts with our listeners. If you'd like to find out more about what Tim and Rialto Marketing has to offer or want to connect with them, check out the show notes for more details.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. To learn more about this episode or hear previous episodes, check out the show notes at www.fpainc.com/podcast. And if you like today's show, please do us a favor and share it with your friends. We'd really appreciate getting the word out there. And you can subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. And while you're there, please do give us a review. Again, we'd really appreciate that. You can also write to us at podcast@fpainc.com. And if you want to send us a tweet, our handle on Twitter is @FPAINC. I'm Craig Bollock, and you've been listening to the FPA Business Before Technology podcast. And remember, with FPA, it's always about business before technology. Take care.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.